This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Hello, and welcome everyone. There's a lot of new faces here. Some familiar faces, but a lot of first-time people here. Can you raise your hand if it's your first time at Jikoji? Wow, that's amazing. That's amazing. Thank you so much for making your way up the hill and trying to find us and coming here and being brave and trying this for the first time. And welcome. So my name is Oshin. I'm one of the two teachers here. And I live here, stay here about a quarter of the year, about a third of the year. And then the rest of the time I live back on the East Coast. And the rest of the time, the other teacher, Pamela Nenzen Brown, Sensei is here. Sometimes we get to overlap. I really like it when we get to overlap. I get to see my sister. But yes, welcome. I wanted to start by reading a little poem. This poem was written in the 1700s by a monk called Hakuin. Hakuin Ekaku wrote this. He called it Zazen Wasan, which is it's like saying the song of Zazen. This is my song of Zazen. Yeah. This is my song about meditation. So some of you that were with me in the beginning instruction, and we were learning, what is this when we say Zazen? What is this practice? So I wanted to read this poem. Zazen Wasan. All beings by nature are Buddha. As ice by nature is water. Apart from water, there's no ice. Apart from beings, there's no Buddha. How sad that people ignore the near and search for truth afar. Like someone in the midst of water, crying out in thirst. Like a child of a wealthy home, wandering among the poor. Lost on dark paths of ignorance, we wander through the six worlds. From dark path to dark path, we wander. When shall we be freed from birth and death? For this, the Zazen of the Mahayana deserves the highest praise. Offerings, precepts, paramitas, nembutsu, atonement, practice, the many other virtues all rise within Zazen. Those who try Zazen even once wipe away immeasurable crimes. Where are all the dark paths then? The pure land itself is near. Those who hear this truth even once and listen with a grateful heart, treasuring it, revering it, gain blessings without end. Much more, if you turn yourself about and confirm your own self-nature, that self-nature is no nature. You are far beyond mere argument. The oneness of cause and effect is clear. Not two, not three. The path is put right. With form that is no form, going and coming, never astray. With thought that is no thought, singing and dancing are the voice of the law, the voice of the Dharma. Boundless and free is the sky of samadhi. Bright the full moon of wisdom. Truly, is anything missing now? Nirvana is here before your eyes. This very place is the lotus land. This very body, the Buddha. It's beautiful, isn't it? I feel he so captures this spirit of Zazen and his appreciation and understanding of Zazen. And I hope a lot of what he said you can listen to. And maybe it doesn't always make sense to our minds. And that's okay. Sometimes, as Daido Roshi put it, the Dharma is dark to our mind, yet radiant to our heart. You know, so we don't always need to fully understand it with our mind. We just sometimes need to practice and practice and practice and let the understanding kind of seep into us. Yeah. So last week I was speaking about the four practices or the four beneficial actions of a bodhisattva. This was based on Dogen's advice for difficult times, you know. So we were talking about that. It's kind of a difficult time to practice for some of us. And there's a perception that I'm hearing from a lot of students that it feels like the world is more intense. It feels like the world is on fire. Or it feels like there's more and more problems to deal with. And Dogen, you know, like 1,000 years ago, the founder of our Zen sect, I think he was hearing some of the same things. We had a lot of turmoil and strife and changing political paradigms as they moved into the Edo period in Dogen's life, where it was a relatively stable period, but a period which was the entire country was ruled by warlords and the shogunate. So it was all divided up, and there's all these little civil wars. And eventually, it was a very stable period, relatively speaking, but didn't feel like that at first. And we talked about how Dogen, he had to leave his first temple. We don't know. We think it might have even been burned. So it's this incredible story, you know. And someone trying to teach this way, and picturing a temple like this. And then one day he said, "Okay, everybody, grab your cushions. We're going to need to move to a different temple. We need to go somewhere else. We can't stay here for whatever reason." So we like to think that the practice of Dogen's time was a practice that was full of stability. And oh, it was the golden age to study meditation and Zen. I wish I was Dogen's student. I wish I was there before email, you know, before all of my worries, right? But that's also before electricity, before running water, and before penicillin, and before a lot of things that we really love and need in our lives. So this was a tough time to practice, relatively speaking. And Dogen offered these teachings, these encouragements for us. Now, what something is really interesting is this. This was the last teaching from Dogen before he died. So he was a mystic and a poet. We put that first poem to shame with its imagery and its hard to penetrate symbolism, you know. But Dogen wrote beautifully, and we still study it. It's amazing work. But then this last teaching appears, and it's kind of a different tone than all the other teachings. It's very direct. It's very practical. This is what you should do with your life. This is how we can respond to tough times. So it's this kind of nuts and bolts and a basic teaching. And I thought this is a good thing. But what's really amazing about this is that this teaching kind of parallels the Buddha's own teaching. So the Buddha's life after his awakening, he taught and taught and taught and taught all the way through to the end of his life. And then the Parinirvana Sutra, or the sutra of his of the ending of his life as we know it, he had such a similar teaching. Very nuts and bolts. This is what we should do. So When we're asking ourselves these questions, how do I want to live? What kind of person do I want to be? Or how do I want to respond in these challenging times? How do I continue to cultivate my heart and my mind in these challenging times? Or how do I show up in the world? I want to show up. I want to do more. I want to be engaged. How do I show up in the world as it is, with this one as it is? Not waiting for some greater moment, not waiting for some change to happen before fully committing ourselves, before fully committing our lives. So these four beneficial actions of a bodhisattva were his 95th fascicle, is the kind of his last chapter. And sometimes it's translated as the four guidances, which I think is a good translation. Sometimes it's translated as the four embraces. The four embraces, like the four hugs almost. And I think that's also a good translation into English. And when we sit with the kanji, it's really interesting. Lots of subtle meanings can come up. So those four practices that we were talking about last week are dana, or giving, generosity, right? Loving speech, beneficial action, and identity action. So dana, generosity, giving. This one makes sense. And it's great that he starts with that. Everything kind of starts with generosity. I like to think with everything starts with humility as well. New learning, new relationships. We humble ourselves, we open our hearts. We're ready to receive. And only an open hand is ready to receive, right? So we understand that giving money, that's one form. We need to do that. And certainly now, I think when the world's on fire, we need to pay attention to maybe what causes need our help or who in our community needs support. But of course, it goes way beyond money. It's not just about money. Dana is a relational way of being. Dana is just about being in relationship, right? It's just about acknowledging that we're all in a big relationship together. So we have to stop thinking of dana as a transaction. We think about giving. What are other ways we can give? We can give with our attention. Last week I talked about how we can give with our bravery. We can show up in a brave way. And that's a really powerful way to be giving of ourselves, to give our energy to a cause, to a friend, So most of all, dana is nothing more than a deep acknowledgement of relationship. I don't exist independently. I know I get a lot of support from you, and I'm going to try and support you in turn. So the second, I'm trying to blow through some of these. I'm going to go a little fast because we covered the first two, three last week. So the second one is loving speech. Loving speech, or kind speech in this way. So speaking with kindness and empathy and a kind of genuine desire to uplift others. Just as we see dana as being relational, of course, speech is very relational. And we talk about it in an interpersonal way. We always think about speech always in an interpersonal way. How are you? We have a conversation. But I also like to think of speech as intrapersonal, as part of ourselves as well. So we acknowledge the way we speak to others and the way we engage others has a lot of power. But also the way I'm engaging myself, the way I'm talking to myself, the way I'm relating with myself, has a lot of power. And a lot of you that are new to this practice and have just spent, an hour or a half hour seated, meeting yourself in a whole new radical way that you've never experienced before. Meeting yourself in this very subtle, very open way. That's the heart of this dana, right? And also loving speech. Because we'll notice our own minds, how we start to talk to ourselves, right? We were talking about that back there in beginning instruction, We're learning to count our breaths, one, two. And then when we start thinking about our coffee order or the slide deck that's not finished, or the garbage needs to go out or something, right? And then we start, all of a sudden, we're in this whole other world that's not here and it's not now. And then when we notice that, what do we do? Say, get back here. Come on, get back on the cushion, ocean. Get back here. What are you doing? Bad dog. Get back here. And we notice how we're talking to ourselves in our own mind. We notice how we're relating with ourselves when we reach out to ourselves. And so we can change that relationship to be one that is much more compassionate and understanding. I'm a human. My brains make thoughts. That's what a brain does. That's its job, is to just keep pumping out thoughts, to keep taking all this sensory information and all this stuff it's getting, and to try and survive and make thoughts and make stuff out of it. That's okay. That's okay. Right? That's okay. And we notice as we have this new relationship with ourselves, how open and compassionate it becomes. It changes our relationship with others. And by engaging others more compassionately, it changes our relationship with ourselves, right? Because we're all one. So saving you isn't any different from saving me. Okay? Taking care of myself isn't any different than taking care of a friend and taking care of my mother. Right? The Buddha said so. So it's intrapersonal as well. Yeah. We have to watch the relationship we have with ourselves and others. Because as we chant every day, and we'll chant at the end of this Dharma talk, we'll chant about saving all sentient beings. And we mean it. We're going to try and help everyone. But that saving is incomplete if it doesn't include ourselves. Right? So as all beings, this one too. So we were practicing, how can we embody compassion more this way? How? How can you do that? So that's your challenge. That's your homework, is to think about, how can I just be a little bit more compassionate with my speech, with myself, and with others? Make it a practice. When you leave the house going to work, I'm going to be compassionate for the whole journey to work. Watch what happens. And we go back to the Zazen Wasan, when he's talking about all of those dark paths, immeasurable crimes, and they all disappear. All of a sudden, compassion. Where do all those dark paths go? So we can think about that. How will we embody compassion in our lives right now? Let's not make it an abstract exercise. Let's see what we can do about it now. And then a third is beneficial action. It's like performing actions for others that contribute to their well-being. What he said was skillfully to benefit all classes of beings, sentient and insentient, human and non-human. Beneficial action is an act of oneness, benefiting self and others together. Now we understand how when terms like beneficial action are translated as embracing action, right? Because all of a sudden, beneficial sounds like, oh, yeah, I will do some happy, meritorious thing to this person at some point. But when I say embracing action, that's this body showing up, getting involved, embracing, connecting with. When my friend is grieving and we're hugging, it's one being just grieving, right? That's all we're talking about. You don't have to worry about, is this right? Am I saying the right thing? Am I doing the right thing? I don't want just showing up and letting yourself be fully available and fully present, not holding parts of ourselves back. And notice how the world opens up to us when we're like this. Skillfully to benefit all classes of sentient beings. It's just another expression of this universal nature or our oneness. Last week, I was talking about how Thich Nhat Hanh called it interbeing. He didn't say oneness, he said interbeing. It's like my being and your being. It's all one big being, kind of interbeing. It's like you're the left hand and you're the right hand and I'm the foot. And it's like we're one interbeing, moving together, thinking it's separate, but moving together. And this practice helps us to remember how we're not separate. So I also wanted to read this quote. It's by Rabindranath Tagore. I don't know quite how to pronounce this person's name. But it's a kind of famous quote, and it says, I slept and dreamt that life was joy. I awoke and saw that life was service. I acted, and behold, service was joy. Right? I slept and I dreamt that life was joy. I awoke and saw that life was service. I acted, and behold, service was joy. Huh? And the last, identity action. This is recognizing the inherent unity of all beings and acting from a place of non-duality. Seeing oneself as not separate from others. The more you define these, the more you talk about them, they sound like every other one. They have so much overlap. And the more you practice them, they don't even feel separate at all. So identity action could be kind of considered being in identity with. And Dogen kind of, when he talks about it, he talks about it in two main aspects. Talks about it in terms of non-difference and all-embracing. So when he's talking about the non-difference side, he's talking about the practice of realizing non-separation. We know we're one being. And then he talks about the all-embracing side, which is just the, I like to think of it as the widening our views to see more interconnectedness. Just widening our view to see more of that interconnectedness and seeing how it plays part in a larger whole. So, when we take all of these together, we realize that we have to practice, that they are a practice. It's not just enough to have a thought and recognize, hey, we're interconnected. It feels good to maybe come to Jokoji and sit in this oneness and feel a little bit of recharge and feel, yeah, I felt oneness. That was great. Now let me go back to my life. We have to practice it and extend it to different areas of our life. And you start to practice it and you recognize, oh, where are you getting tripped up on those little barriers? And my barriers are sometimes self and other, you know? I get hung up on this one and this one, you know? So we have practices to stretch our mind and our heart to try and find that connection with others, people that don't look like me or people that don't think like me. And I'm thinking a lot about the world as it is today. There's a lot of people that don't think like me and act like me. You know? And for a lot of us, you know, I'll go a step further and say it's not good enough to just have progressive beliefs. It's not good enough to just think progressive values or to think about oneness. We have to do it. We have to enact it. We have to show up in the world. And it's needed right now, right? So one of the practices that we have in Buddhism is called metta, metta practice. And this is a very, very old practice that the Buddha described. And we have different techniques. And one of them is a visualization technique. And sometimes we'll practice it by visualizing somebody we love. We can visualize somebody we love and sending them love. We can picture it as light, as a golden light, sending them a light. Or we could picture sending all those feelings we have of love and of goodness about this person. And we could picture ourselves sending that to them and then receiving it. It's a beautiful feeling because we're just expanding the love in our hearts and we're kind of filling ourselves with love as we try and love this other person, right? So I'm also deaf, by the way. I don't think I covered this. I'm deaf. I can't hear. So that's why my voice is a little different, right? Because I lost my hearing as I got older. So I use sign language mostly to communicate. And we have a sign language interpreter on the screen of the, it's actually one of my students, Jessica. So later when we have Q&A, she'll interpret what you say so I can understand. Anyway, so when we do this metta practice, I teach people to also in sign language how to do this. And in sign language, we have a sign that means I love you. And it's this. Maybe some of you have seen that before. You've seen this before. And it's almost ubiquitous. It's almost the symbol for deaf culture, for all deaf people. It's like our symbol. And really, it's the letter I in our alphabet, the letter L, and the letter Y all put together. So it's a symbol, it's an acronym, it's a symbol for the culture, it's everything, right? It's a really powerful symbol. So we use this, and so and we as we're visualizing, sending love to people, we can get a mudra involved, you know, this loving mudra, and we can send people a mudra also from their hands and our body. So I was teaching people one day how to do this and go through this metta practice to go through the stages of metta. And so first we picture somebody we love, we're sending them love, and then we picture somebody further out. Maybe somebody from work, somebody we have a relationship with that we're learning about. And so we send them love. Just practicing, not holding back, not judgment, no criteria, not if they're worth it or not, just sending them pure love, practicing that. It's hard sometimes, right? And then we go a little further out. Somebody that we have a struggle with. Somebody that we don't like, maybe. Somebody that we have a tough relationship with. So we start sending them love. Sending them love. And we watch what happens to our hearts in that relationship. It's powerful. It's so simple and it's so powerful if you actually sit down and do it. So as I was taking people through this practice and they're going further and further out, and I can see them picturing somebody further and further out, finally picturing somebody they really, really don't like, they really hate, and they're really struggling in their relationship with this person. A lot of us are thinking about the same person right now. And we try and send him love. That's hard. And so I went through this whole practice. And I said, and the last thing we do is now send that same love to ourselves. Well, the first time I did this, I had a room full of people sending love. And then when I asked them to turn it to themselves, I watched people physically struggle to turn that hand back to themselves. I was shocked. It was like, oh my gosh, it was so palpable, so physically visual of some of the problems with being a human and being a human right now. It's just sending love, love, love. I can even send love to that guy maybe before I can really send pure love to myself. Accepting and loving myself completely, just as it is, just as I am right now. It's a good practice. I encourage you to try it one day on your own, to take 20 minutes and just breathing, sending on. So I'll get asked with all of this identity action, and you're talking about all these kind of complicated concepts. What underpins all of that? Or how do I get to this oneness? And the answer is quite often compassion, right? We can do complex visualization techniques. We can meditate until our legs fall off. Oneness, 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 oneness. But we can also go the other way too. And extend compassion and compassion and compassion, and let that break down all of those barriers that we have, including the barriers between myself and others. So when I'm driving home from work and somebody cuts me off, I know that's just me cutting me off. That's just me. I've been in a rush before. I've had to go to the bathroom so bad that I maybe drove too fast, broke the speed limit, right? We've all been in that position. So when somebody cuts me off, I say, oh, it's just me rushing home. That's just me concerned about my sick child. It's just me. And we sit there in the middle of traffic and say, I hate traffic. Not realizing we are also traffic, right? We are a car. We are part of the problem. We are in the middle of it. And we can just all of a sudden ungrip the steering wheel and allow ourselves to say, this is me flowing along with me. Okay? To paraphrase Dogen, he said, my actions are my only true belongings. They are the ground in which I stand. For things to reveal themselves to us, we need to be ready to abandon our views about them. We're getting cut off. If we're meeting somebody new, if we're tasting something for the first time or the thousandth time, we have to abandon our views about it to taste it. To meet it, to engage it. And Dogen closes by saying that each of these four methods of guidance can be included in the other four. So we can think about how does dana, how does generosity show up in identity action? How does identity action show up in generosity? And Dogen says that's a valuable thing to look at. And it's much more clear when I sit with these questions. Even with I sit with the struggle with these questions and how to enact them, things arise with a lot more clarity and intimacy for me. So, like I said last week, maybe it's like watering the garden. I don't know about oneness in the garden, but I know it needs watering. So I go out there with my watering can. And while I'm out there with my watering can, I notice a weed, some stinky Bob, right? We've been culling stinky Bob, this invasive weed, out of our garden. So I'm watering and I notice some stinky Bob. Pull that. And I notice some vegetables that might be ready or some herbs for dinner tonight. Maybe a rock that's caught my eye. And I come back to the kitchen thinking I was just going to water. And now I have a handful of vegetables. I have dirt under my nails. I have a rock in my pocket. Where's the garden? Where's the garden? It's under my nails. It's in my cuffs. It's in my hair, what's left of my hair. It's with me, right? So sometimes I don't have to worry about oneness and worry about if I'm getting it right. And I just need to show up, put my body into it. Just like the way of the Bodhisattva, we have to release it. I mean, release it. Lifetime after lifetime, be ready to release it and to show up to save all sentient beings. And we acknowledge, hey, it may take many lifetimes to do this. We're okay with that because we understand it may take many lifetimes to open this heart. It may take many lifetimes to fix that problem. And we accept that. And we work with that because I have a many lifetimes vow. I know that's what the world needs, so that's the vow I made. Okay. So I would like to close with a poem by Mary Oliver. And I think you'll hear a lot of the parallels, what Mary is saying here, and what Hakuin Ikkaku was saying hundreds of years ago in his Song of Zazen. So I ask that you listen one last time. The storm. For how many years have you gone through the house, shutting windows, while the rain was still 5 miles away, and veering, oh, plum-colored clouds to the north, away from you? And you did not even know to be sorry. You were glad those silver sheets with the occasional golden staple were sweeping on elsewhere, violent and electric and uncontrollable. And you will find yourself finally wanting to forget all enclosures, including the enclosure of yourself. Oh, lonely leaf. And you will dash frantically to the windows and you will haul them open and you will lean out to the dark, silvered sky, to everything that is beyond capture, shouting, I am here. I'm here now, 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 now. It's dana, it's loving speech, it's beneficial action, it's identity out. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jikoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jikoji, please visit us on the web at jikoji.org.